Okay, so we are, sorry, I don't do this very often. All right, hello everyone. This is Guillaume, and you're listening to Radio for Nintendo. This is the special E3 at home episode of Radio for Nintendo. James and Johnny are both at E3. Johnny, our regular host, and James, the often substitute host. So this time it's my turn, and I am not alone. I am joined by the same guy who's been on a streak for months now, John.
Yeah, it's getting boring now, so, here I am again. Here I am again, big surprise, I know.
Yep, and we also got a special guest, someone who's been on a more unfortunate streak of not being on the show anymore, but who's breaking it.
I thought he was going to bring up the Bills playoff streak then, for the kick a man when he's down.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Well, that's gotten boring as well, Greg.
I don't understand those football
references. For you.
But yes, so you've recognized our friend Greg Leahy.
Ahoy, ahoy, everyone.
All right, so we are here to discuss Nintendo's showing at E3. And Greg, so you haven't had the chance to chime in, like to give your predictions or anything.
Yes, I will predict a new Star Fox.
All right, that's not what I'm going to ask. But let's just say, what were your expectations in terms of Nintendo's showing? I mean, we knew that they were going to do the digital event, which we knew was going to be like a pre-recorded event, just like they did last year.
Yeah.
How did you expect it to go on,
Yeah, I mean, there was a few, it was rather than because I don't have to do silly prediction shows or anything anymore, I tend to form more questions in my mind than expectations. So yeah, there was a couple of things I was really interested in. First of all, they went out of their way to say it was the Nintendo Digital Event as right. opposed to a Nintendo Direct for E3. Mm-hmm. So it was okay, how different is it going to be? In what ways will it be differentiated from their usual efforts to just video PR releases, essentially? And then a few other things that were big questions in my mind was, what was going to be that second game at the round table? You had the Smash Brothers round table that can easily carry 90 minutes. A second game for 3DS that we don't know, it's unannounced and all that. I was very intrigued by what that was going to be, because, with 3DS and the whole panic when it didn't start off that well, they've hit right. so many of the things that you expect them to hit on that console already. It was what's left? And as it turned out, it was a new IP, so that kind of made sense. But yeah, those were the kind of the biggest things I was looking forward to seeing. As well as obviously the games that had been glimpsed in the past, again as a product of the sort of desperation that they've had when they've struggled, games like Yoshi, now Yoshi's mm-hmm. Woolly World, because that had been seen and then not seen again for a year and a half, you kind of get right. a little nervous about what's going on there, and so I was anxious to see all that kind of thing too.
Yeah, I just, I'm not sure what I expected. Nintendo Digital Event, I expected to go maybe a little bit better. I didn't have my hopes up very high. I thought, they're going to fix their streaming problem because they're partnering with Twitch, but it's basically going to be the same thing as last year. And, they teased this whole, inside the treehouse thing. And what I pictured was, they're going to bring some crappy cameras inside the treehouse. They're going to show everyone at their workstations, and we're going to get an inside view of what it's like to work at Nintendo, and it's not going to be all that impressive or interesting. And wow, they've really blown me away. But first, let's talk about the digital event video itself. Very obvious, right away, you could see that they spent a whole lot more money on it than they do a regular Nintendo Direct, where they have mm-hmm. Reggie in his office, just, face shining, poor camera work and everything. This time, not only they had good camera work, they also had you know, they bought the services of Seth Green and Robot Chicken to do a Robot Chicken opening with a Reggie figurine, just, you know, giving this pretend presentation, and with lots of wacky hijinks with different Mario characters, and this kind of recurring snarky critic character that Reggie would keep killing with fireballs and eye lasers. So yeah, that right away, that kind of set a different tone, I think, than what I was expecting. And then they followed that up with a kind of a video of Reggie and Iwata in the Matrix. And I think there's probably not a whole lot of people who did not enjoy that. You know,
yeah.
Like they're not the greatest actors by a long shot, but that was really enjoyable. And then that just gave way to an announcement about Smash Brothers and how you could use the Miis in battle, which I think was, you know, perhaps a predictable move, or at least like it's something that a lot of people were hoping for. But yeah, so they kind of, what I did not expect was that there's three types of kind of move sets for Mii characters. So they announced that they have like brawler types, sword fighter types, and gunner types, and each of those types kind of tell you exactly, you know, when you need to know about those fighting styles.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the big questions, right? Is, okay, so they incorporate Miis, that's kind of a no-brainer, but how would they do that in a way that they could actually make them competitive and make them fit in with the rest of the characters in the game in terms of movesets?
Yeah,
so.
I thought it was kind of, they talked before on that Smash Brothers dedicated direct about having customizable movesets for any of the characters, although you wouldn't necessarily be able to take those into non-friend online games. But, you know, that I always felt was like, well, that sounds like something that would be perfect for Miis. You know, that
right.
It'll be very customizable. But yeah, what you've got is the sort of wrinkle of these three different classes of characters that the Miis can sort of inhabit, which then sort of multiplies the number of permutations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, back in the Wii days, I guess it would have been obvious to make Miis like swing rackets and baseball bats and things like that. But since then, they've been used a whole lot more, and they've been, you know, donning Samus costumes and Link costumes. So they've kind of been used for a much wider variety of activities. And so it kind of makes sense now to have these kind of just fully decked fighters that are not really aping any particular Nintendo character. They're just like doing their own thing. And, you know, we've had Gunner Miis in Nintendo Land, and we've had, you know, sword fighting and all that stuff. So yeah, like how excited are you guys about Smash Brothers at this point?
I mean, it's kind of tough for me to say because I have yet to get my hands on it. But I mean, from everything I've read and everything I've seen, I mean, it looks like it's going to be a better version of Smash Brothers that we all know and love, which is perfectly fine. I mean, I'm perfectly okay with that. The online component, you know, I really want to see that, and you know, I really want to see that in action. You know, so. But I didn't have a chance to see the tournament, so
I think it was fairly sort of telling when Johnny, I think it was Johnny, asked the question at the round table about online, and they were still sort of saying about, you know, well, best possible connection is a wired one, so you might want to consider that.
So, yeah.
It's kind of managing expectations a little bit there. For the majority of people are probably not going to get the LAN adapter or whatever. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not sure how the online is going to turn out. I mean, I kind of feel like, I mean, we talked about this goodness knows how many times when Brawl was coming out all those years ago, the fact that Smash Brothers is a very complex game. I mean, fighting games in general are quite difficult to do well online compared to something like a racing game. And this is something I think that Sakurai also said in that round table in response to Johnny's question, is the fact they could do some asynchronous kind of stuff. To smooth out some of the unevenness in an online match in a racing game that you just can't do fighting game wise. And then there's Smash Brothers, which is four players, items, stage crazy. You know, there's a lot more variables. It is always going to be difficult to do well. On the other hand, I certainly some of the stories you've heard as well suggest that Brawl could have been done better. You know, like it's not as if there isn't room for improvement, because I'm very confident that there is. But on the other hand, I feel like there may well be a pretty solid ceiling on how good they can get it too. So my expectations remain modest in that area, but for the general game, I mean, Smash Brothers is a huge favourite of mine, so I'm really looking forward to getting into it. And of course, the 3DS game's coming first, and we know a little bit more about some of the sort of unique the particular things that are going to be in that game, like the Smash Run mode and all that. But we still, with the Wii U, obviously they showed more and it looks very nice, and they showed some of the new characters and things, but you still don't really know anything about what's going to make that version that particular, other than it's going to be on the really big beautiful screen that Smash Brothers really should be on.
Right. And just you know, it's a you have an easier time playing with other people in the same room, and it's just a more convenient setup, right?
Yeah, but on the flip side, it's on the console with the smaller install base. What we've got there. But no, I just, it's interesting that it's supposed, you know, still meant to be coming out this year, and with 3DS coming at the very beginning of October, that means that there's you know, not a big gap between them, presumably, if they don't delay it. And so there's plenty of people who will buy both. I very likely will be that one of those people, but it'd still be interesting to see how, in the end, they try and sort of prod more people to be in that group by, you know, offering something kind of more substantially different than just, well, you know, the console experience and the convenience of a handheld.
Yeah, I mean, for me, Wii U, no-brainer purchase. I mean, that's going to be a great, great game. The 3DS one, I don't know. I feel like I'd have to get a hands-on. This is something where if I got a hands-on, like at Best Buy or something like that, I'm kind of skeptical of how well they can, that action, the high action, and especially, you know, some people have said, you know, kind of when the action zooms out, characters get a little small.
Yeah.
Stuff like that, like critical stuff like that that really matters in the midst of a match. That's the kind of stuff I'm kind of skeptical about with 3DS.
Right. I'm not that big of a Smash Brothers fan in the first place, so I'm just probably going to stick with the one version, and that's going to be the Wii U version. But yeah, I would have to wonder, okay, how easy is it to, you know, keep your eyes on your own character in the 3DS version when the things are zoomed out and it's just pure chaos on the screen.
It seems like a sort of ironic issue to have, from the point of view that the difference with having a multiplayer on a handheld is that you all have your own screen. So, but of course, Smash Brothers is so much about the dimensions of the screen and getting knocked off it. And, you know, so you still have to have that commonality there. I guess, I don't know, maybe I assume the stages are being designed to generally be more compact than maybe some of the bigger ones on the console. But also, you know, but can they just with the camera fudge it a little bit so that it doesn't ever get too drawn out when you're using the 3DS version? Because, you know, like I said, it seems counterintuitive, isn't it? You know, everybody's got their own view of the action. So should it ever get that bad?
I don't know. It's unfortunate I haven't been able to watch much of the streaming. They have been streaming on Twitch their that version, the 3DS version. So perhaps people can just take a look and see, you know, and make their their minds up about whether, like, is this playable on such a tiny screen?
Yeah.
But let's move on. So from that presentation, then we were brought to Reggie announcing the name of their line of NFC figurines, and it's called Amiibo, which it's a name, I guess.
Yeah, it's kind of random. I was like, Amiibo? What?
I'm wondering what the AM and the bow, I mean, no, rather the A and the bow stand for. Like, we get the Mii. It's part of their branding for the Wii. But outside of that, like, I don't know. It seems to come out of nowhere.
Yeah, it sounds like something that would be for China or something like that.
Kind of a nice international name, something that everyone everywhere will be able to pronounce without really, you know, they'd all look equally ridiculous. I was going to say not look ridiculous, but it's, you know, amiibo. Yeah, so this is coming this holiday, hopefully. And Reggie explained it without really not explaining anything. And then, you know, like we were supposed to stay afterwards for Biltron and explaining in more detail what the figurines do. And as it turns out, they do, it seems so far for Smash Brothers anyway, they do similar things to the Skylanders and the Disney Infinity figurines. What they seem to do is introduce kind of the concept of leveling up a character in Smash Brothers. And it seems like you can just, like, you touch them on the, you touch the figurine, the gamepad, and so you can start leveling up this figurine, and they will fight automatically. You can set one to fight against the other, or you can, you know, make it fight the computer player, or you can fight against them, or you can have them on your team. But again, like, there's a, I don't think that they've really explained why you would want to do that.
not especially well so far. No. I suppose this is one of the things that is particular to the console version. They are talking about having an adapter that you can read mm-hmm. these amiibo figures for 3DS games eventually. So that might interface with the 3DS version of Smash Brothers, but you feel like that might be a bit farther down the line than with the console game. And yeah, it does remind me a little bit of of another Sakurai thing with was it with the Kid Icarus AR cards where they just start fighting each other.
Oh, right.
It kind of reminded me of that a little bit. Yeah, it's. Interesting idea, I guess. If you kind of wanted to play team matches and you built up your own figure character into your sort of ultimate co-op partner, because they kept talking about, oh, well, CPU characters can go up to level 9, but this can go up to level 50. So let me get this straight. You're deliberately holding down the artificial intelligence of the CPU fighters to make the figures seem awesome. That's brilliant. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
It's very much a turn it up to 11 sort of nonsense moment, except it's turn it up to 15.
Yeah, and I gotta say, I'm not truly, you know, all that in love with the idea of having to level up, even if there's no grinding involved, which it will. You know, you'll have to grind to level up, but like even just the concept of leveling up this character, why introduce that element in games that never required it before? Mm-hmm. I'm kind of against that. I like good old fashioned arcade fun where everyone has predetermined you know, move sets and kind of abilities, and you're supposed to master those abilities. You're not supposed to just keep using them over and over again to just level them up arbitrarily.
But anyway. I still feel like there's a lot about it that we don't know exactly how it's going to be implemented. And of course, just looking at the figures in general, you know, I mean, they look quite nice considering they're quite small. They, you know, mm-hmm. you get close up to them and they actually sort of hold up to scrutiny, you know, in terms of some of the detailing and stuff. So that's nice, but there's still the question of price. You know, how much are they going to cost? That is the real issue, I think, in terms of how much people are going to be willing to buy things, you know, beyond just your buying, your parents buying for their children because it's a nice toy. You know, in terms of functionality, it seems fairly superfluous. So the price and how nice the final manufactured figures are when they're.
I'm pretty sure they're going to go the route of making the figurines cheaper looking for mass production. Like these,
you would think so. Yeah, I mean, it's always going to be sort of an approximation of those initial kind of master figures, but how close is it? You know, that's the real question.
Right. All right, so let's move on from NFC figurines. The Nintendo Direct then moved on to showing us finally after a year, more than a year.
I think it wasn't it the January one that they showed, January 2013, that they showed that one or two screenshots of a tiny little bit of footage of Yoshi or whatever. So yeah, I think it's been like a year and a half nearly since we really saw anything about that.
Yeah, so they had a good field person, Ibisu, and Tezuka just introducing Yoshi's Woolly World. Finally, we see it in motion. And yeah, it does show that there's been 18 months of work on that game because, oh my god, it's so pretty.
Yeah,
I mean, again, that was really what they were showing 18 months ago is stuff that they would not have shown had it not been for the fact that it's like, oh, things are scary, let's give people hope.
Yeah, we're doing stuff.
Yeah, when things are going well, it's like, you have no idea we've been planning a DK revival, but it's coming out in 4 months, you know? Like, that was when things were going well, and then when things are going badly, it's like, here's a screenshot of Yoshi, see you in a couple of years. That's, you know, so, yeah, but the problem when you get to that phase where they talk about stuff really early, and this is obviously something that applies to this new Star Fox game as well, I'm sure we'll get to, is that it can get cancelled. You know, like, if you show stuff early, you might get further into development, hit a wall, or something's not working, you just end up canning it. So that's why I was, you know, anxious to see where they were with it and if they was going to talk about it again. And of course they did. And as a fan of good fields of side-scrollers that were on the Wii, I've got a lot of confidence in it. And it certainly looks very nice. I mean, one thing that I was kind of interested in is the idea that Epic Yarn was lauded for its graphic style, of course. In part because it's like, oh, well, it suits the Wii very well. You know, this sort of fuzziness of not being high def. It's sort of a serendipitous thing, you know, because it suits this art style. So it was like, okay, well, if we're now going to expand it to a more powerful console, you know, how much better can you really make it look? And, you know, what you get with Woolly World is, is more three dimensional. You do get those kind of rolling fabric hills in the background and all that kind of stuff. And so even though it is very much the same aesthetic in many ways, it does have a different look. There is a lot more lighting going on. You know, it has, like, like I said, I think that's the best way to put it. It's just a more three-dimensional take on this type of aesthetic, even though the gameplay remains strictly side-scrolling.
Right, and beyond the graphics, I think one of my worries, and probably was shared by a lot of people, was that this would be another Yarn game where, you know, Kirby didn't have his Kirby abilities, really, in Kirby's Epic Yarn. He was swinging this lasso, and this lasso turns out, you know, it's a very similar action to Yoshi sticking his tongue out, you know? So I was kind of wondering, okay, are they just replacing the main character here to have Yoshi, who's going to perform the exact same actions, and is it going to be kind of a rehash except with a different franchise? But no, like, it turns out that and Tezuka in the video made sure to explain this, they did not approach Goodfield to make a sequel to Kirby's Epic Yarn. What they wanted to do was make another Yoshi game in the Yoshi's Island style, but with that type of those types of graphics. So instead of you know, swinging Yoshi's tongue and just unraveling enemies, you actually, you know, like, eat them up and, you know, eggs pop out the other, the other way. And, you actually, it seems like from what I could see from the level design, it's very, very similar to Yoshi's Island on the Super Nintendo. I mean, it's very exploration-based.
Yeah, of course, lack of Baby Mario should be pointed out that there, in that way, you know, a little bit more like Yoshi's Story. But
but Yoshi does have some sort of health.
I noticed that with some interest because, of course, Epic Yarn, you just lost beads. Which, there seems to be a fairly heavy component, again, of collecting beads and that being tallied up as you score at the end. But here, you don't lose those for getting hurt. You've got a little circle around Yoshi of hearts. And when you can shoot clouds and hearts will drop out very much like the stars did in Yoshi's Island, which added up for the timer before Baby Mario would get kidnapped. So, they've seemed to have sort of adapted that just a little bit to work without Baby Mario. But yeah, it does suggest, I mean, I think it's all the footage I've seen is of co-op, which of course is new to a Yoshi's Island style game as well. But, so if somebody died, they sort of floated around in an egg, kind of like New Super Mario Brothers with the bubble. But I'm assuming if you were playing one player, you could just die. Which, of course, in Kirby's Epic Yarn, you couldn't.
Yeah, that's exciting. And the level design, very Yoshi's Island-esque. And Yoshi's abilities still, you know, can aim eggs and throw them, and he can still flutter jump. And so the level design seemed to reflect that. And it's very much exploration-based. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, for your finding flowers, and they've got these three little special
balls of wool or whatever that you can find in each stage. So, you know, it seems like it's that classic style. But and also, I noticed the aiming of the eggs was very Yoshi's Island style, not like Yoshi's Story, for instance, which used the analog stick. It had the kind of, cycling reticule or cursor, which it seemed a little bit slow to me. You know, and I don't know whether they're going to have alternatives for aiming for any of the kind of different control setups that they'll presumably have for the final game. Because, I mean, look, it is a slow-paced game, I'm sure. It's not often that you're going to have to do kind of twitch shooting with eggs. But I can say from playing Yoshi's New Island on 3DS, which is hardly a masterpiece, but I did enjoy the game a lot more with the gyro aiming because of how much quicker it is. It just makes the flow of the game better. And there actually are a few cases in the harder levels where it is nice. It is useful to be able to rip off an egg really quickly. And this seemed a bit slow. And it's like, well, the gamepad has gyro in it. Wii Remote Plus has gyro in it. And even if you think back to Wario Land Shake It, which that had tilt, didn't it? For when Wario was throwing stuff. So I'd be surprised if that was an option in the end. I know it's not everyone's cup of tea. There'll be plenty of people that don't want to use it at all, but I personally would be grateful if that were an option.
Well, of course, also, this being on a Wii U, you have a second analog stick and you've got these four, you know, shoulder buttons. So you could imagine some sort of setup where you can do all of the actions, including jumping and shooting the tongue and everything with the triggers and have the second joystick to aim.
Yeah, which would be more like Yoshi's Story style.
Would retain the ability to move around.
To move, with that you had to stop because there was one stick. So, no, I mean, I don't, the thing is, it doesn't seem like it's going to be a game that's terribly taxing on your ability to move and chew, you know? So maybe this is kind of extraneous stuff, but I would just like to see those sorts of things put in there to make it a smoother experience. You know, I mean, I do like kind of exploring and unraveling different parts of the environment and all that kind of stuff, but also like to do it kind of as smoothly as possible. It just makes everything. I think that's one of the things that I wasn't that keen on about Yoshi's Story, is it was a bit plodding for when you're finding all the melons or whatever, you know. So I hope that it's got a bit more of a good flow to the exploration action when you get into it. But the most interesting thing that was shown for me was the whole thing where you shoot the little birds that are from Yoshi's Island as eggs, and it creates the cloud trails.
That's kind of a nod to Yoshi's Touch and Go.
It is, isn't it? You know, because that's pretty much what you were doing in that game, was drawing cloud trails, at least for the Baby Mario bit especially. But that looks like an interesting kind of wrinkle. Certainly, is very interesting in the co-op stuff where you're kind of creating platforms for each other before you fall off and all that kind of stuff. But I mean, hopefully, it's going to be able to introduce enough of those sorts of ideas consistently enough to put something different in there, because that's what you've seen with stuff like Yoshi's New Island and some of the other R-Toon stuff they've done. Where, you know, if you just regurgitate that formula as good as it was the first time, it's limits.
It's not going to be as special.
No, because of what it was based on was being very imaginative, and this so far at least seems, while it is, it is very much a Yoshi game. It's not just a yarn game with a Yoshi kind of character in it. It does at least seem like it's going to bring more genuine kind of imagination to it, and that's essential, really, for making this kind of thing consistently engaging beyond just being cute.
Yeah, and the co-op stuff here, I do have someone to play it, but I hope that it's online in some way. I mean, we do have these third-party games. I think that Devil's Third is online co-op, and so is Bayonetta 2. And it just, you know, it kills me that these, games that Nintendo is publishing will have online co-op, probably like fully featured, probably with the online voice and everything. But Nintendo's own internal efforts, they're still, you know, it's not a priority for them.
Yeah, but I guess those games were being made by outside developers that just found Nintendo as a publisher. That's the difference.
Right.
You know,
yeah,
they just
exactly.
Haven't, it's not something.
But I mean, like, they're showing
themselves.
That it's possible to do in the Wii U.
Oh, but I mean, that's never a question. It's a question of intent and desire and willing to expend the development resources. So unless, like, I could only imagine it would even be in the ballpark of possibility if Goodfield felt very strong strongly about it and somehow managed to sort of twist Nintendo's arm into doing it, but I'm not sure how feasible that is considering what's their experience in that sort of domain.
Right. I just want to touch on this one quote that Tezuka, something he said that I just found surreal after watching these Sony and Ubisoft conferences that just made me angry at how they were, you know, like trying to, I don't know, not incite fear, but all fear-based and like guns and, tragedy is invisible, but only a group of, you know, white guys with guns can save the day, when civilization is collapsing and stuff like that. So you've got all this greedy stuff all over E3 and I'm just fed up with it. And then you've got Tezuka saying, explaining, oh, we've made prototypes of different ways to express the yarn fabric for Yoshi. And we felt that the stuffed yarn Yoshi was particularly attractive. And I'm just like, where does that come from? Like, it's just a surreal quote. Like, this is what Nintendo is actually concerned about, you know, like, oh, the texture, the feel of the wool, and we need to make sure that we actually try to craft these things, you know, by hand to really have a feel of what it's like to have handmade stuff, and then off they go to make their game. It's, I don't know. It's,
well, yeah, see, everywhere else, they do that, they put that same kind of care into, like, showing somebody getting shot in the head. They have to make sure that, right, that the correct volume, they have to make sure that when Snake shoots somebody in the head, the correct volume of blood escapes from the head out onto the floor. It's just it's just a different way of looking at things, Guillaume.
Yeah, I guess. Like EA employees, even the guy who's in charge of, like, has nothing to do with the guns. Like, they're all, you know, taken to a shooting stand and they all spend time with the guns and everything. And then they go back to their studio and make their games. But then you've got Nintendo who go on a field trip to, you know, a knitting, knitting store? Is there such a thing?
Yeah.
It's really weird.
Well, it makes sense. I'm sure that comes from the top down too, right? Because, you know, talking about, you know, always going out on, you know, taking inspiration. I think kind of in their DNA, it's taking inspiration from the real world and incorporating that into their games, you know, rather than chasing some sort of, you know.
Yeah, supposedly Super Mario 3 came out of a visit to Disney World. So
yeah, in hell.
Yeah, you've got stuff like that. Yeah. All right, so let's move on to the next game, which was just they didn't really talk about it. It was just a trailer, but it was Captain Toad Treasure Tracker, which is something that I had been, and I'm not the only one, I had been hoping for when I played the Captain Toad levels in Super Mario 3D World. And I was like, oh, wow, I could play a whole game of this. And in my head, a whole game of this was something I downloaded on the eShop for $15.
Yeah.
But no, Nintendo actually, you know, made this dream concrete, but for probably a full price tag in a retail game, which I'm not against.
They've done, like, you know, Game & Wario was like $40, you know, so it's not out of the question it could be packaged, but not full price. I mean, still more than 15.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I can't see bringing out a package for $15, but yeah.
New Super Luigi had his,
that was kind of primarily digital, but it did have a package release, didn't it?
Right. So yeah, I can, on the one hand, I've seen a lot of comments about how, well, I'm not getting this if it's full price, because it, and I understand the feeling, because this did start as kind of a side game, as a mini game in a quote-unquote more full-featured game. You know, you have the Mario game, and then inside that Mario game, you've got a couple of Captain Toad levels. So yeah, I can understand why it would be a little bit jarring to be expected to shell out, you know, full price for a Captain Toad game. But at the same time, I'm seeing these quotes from people who played it at E3, and they're just like, oh, Captain Toad is very good. Very, very good.
Yeah.
That's from Kohler. And I've seen some other people who were like, oh yeah, like the winners of E3 so far, lower back pain, and Captain Toad.
Just yeah, people, I mean, love it's, Captain it's, Toad.
It's interesting to me, because I don't like to sort of prejudice things by saying, oh, well, it just came out of this little thing, so it can't possibly be worth, you know, that much. I mean, if they have it be, you know, absolutely full of content, you know, I'm thinking, you know, games like that, you know, like Mole Mania for the Game Boy, you know, it's kind of fairly kind of simple puzzle game in a way, in terms of the capabilities you have, but it's quite a beefy game. There's a lot to it when they manage to extend it, and then some like a Cat Trap as well on the Game Boy Virtual Console is a little bit similar. It's just the number of levels you can come up with for these sorts of puzzle games can be surprising sometimes. So I wouldn't assume that it's going to be this little thing, but I guess the fact is, it does have to click with you to make it worthwhile, you know,
right?
Because it's not going to probably take you on some sort of big, you know, journey or anything. Although there was a boss shown in the in the trailer, so it definitely has some sort of ambition beyond the little levels that you saw in 3D World. But the strength of it is going to be obviously just the puzzle solving, and so hopefully over those levels you're going to develop like a whole bunch of different sort of wrinkles that will keep it engaging and hopefully a really nice smooth sort of learning curve. But one thing, I was not surprised that this exists from the point of view that they teased it a little bit, like, oh yeah, we might do something with those Captain Toad levels, when people said that they enjoyed them. But I thought it would show up on 3DS, because I always thought it was more natural with the perspective. It's like that, it's very much like, some of those, it kind of looks like some of those rooms in Super Mario 3D Land.
Yes.
Where, it's isometric type perspective and the blocks and all that. Like, I always felt it was a more natural fit for 3DS, but, obviously they were making 3D World and they got put in that. But if they ever wanted to make its own game, it would go down to 3DS. And that's, portables are more associated with those sorts of experiences, aren't they? I mean, I just referenced two Game Boy games, for instance.
So
I am surprised from that point of view that it's on Wii U, but I do suppose that is the system that has the paucity of software at the moment, and perhaps it's more needed there. But in any event, I think I'll probably be getting it, because assuming it is being developed by EAD Tokyo rather than like somebody else taking on the sort of guts of what they made, they're batting 1,000 for me. Going back to Jungle Beat.
Yeah, it's not going to suck.
Back to Jungle Beat, Galaxy Games, 3D World, 3D Land, they have done no wrong so far. I guess
one concern sometimes with puzzle games is that you're going to burn out. You're going to burn yourself out. Like, you might get stuck at some point and you're kind of sick of just solving puzzles. But so they kind of added this on-rail shooter gameplay where you throw turnips at enemies while you're actually on rails. You're actually in a minecart. But I'm not really a fan of that type of gameplay personally, so I'm not sure if it's really, like, it might break up the action a little bit. But I'm hoping that there's also more platforming type challenges, which is, a challenge, because Captain Toad, his whole shtick is that he doesn't really jump and he doesn't run all that fast. So I don't know. Like, it seems like from the levels that people could play at E3, there's some, interesting variety. You had these Boo, ghost haunted mansion levels where different doors would lead to different places. You also have the gameplay of like, they're using touchscreen to, like, you touch these platforms to make them move up or down. I don't know. They tried to add a couple of twists here and there, but I don't know. I'm not apprehensive, but I'm wondering how they're gonna add variety to the whole idea, the formula of Captain Toad.
Yeah, I guess all you could say so far is, just from the idea that they are gonna release it as a packaged product, they've got, you feel like they must they must think that they've got quite a lot of different ways to sort of change it up and make it a more substantial, long lasting experience.
Right, and some people were saying, well, I guess the retail release is justified if there's 200 levels, but I don't think that's really EAD Tokyo's style. They don't tend to really go for quantity over quality. They do try in their games so far. They've always been good about offering variety.
I think so.
Outside maybe of bosses.
Maybe they'll be like, a sort of a sort of second version of each level where it's just kind of faster and harder or something, if you go by 3D Land, the special worlds kind of treatment to them or something.
Right. Anyway, let's move on from Captain Toad. Then we were treated to Onuma talking about the design philosophy behind the next Zelda game for Wii U. And he's explaining that they decided to go back for inspiration to the first game on the NES. And he was explaining that, okay, so this was very much about exploration, and you would move from screen to screen, up, down, left, and right. And once we entered the 3D realm, it became harder to offer that same kind of freedom. Like, they had to gate players a little bit more. They would offer the illusion of freedom by having these wide areas, but then there would be only like one or two or three exits at the most, mm-hmm. To lead to the next area. And even, you know, they camouflaged it in Wind Waker, but again, every island that you went to, there were only a couple of points where you could enter them. So yeah, now he's saying that with the extra power, finally they have the means to do in 3D what the first Legend of Zelda on the NES did, and kind of offer 360 degrees of freedom. And then he actually showed this, you know, what the game looks like right now, and a lot of people are really, really impressed.
Yeah.
The style is very reminiscent of Skyward Sword, except, you know, in high definition, and it showed this beautiful vista with mountains in the background. And Onuma made sure to point out that yes, if you want to, you can just ride there with your horse, mm-hmm. and there's nothing to stop you. And you had the grass swaying in the wind, and these trees all over the place, and this fog rising out of the ground.
And goats, and, goats, man, there were goats on the hills. Right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I didn't notice those.
Yeah, they're there. So there's probably going to be little animals around, just kind of give an atmosphere. And I think there was a shepherd, too.
Okay. Well, I hope there's no shepherding.
A goat shepherd.
This time.
Whatever a goat yeah. shepherd. Whatever the proper name for a goat shepherd is. Goat herder, I guess?
Yeah.
Yeah, I just hope that there's no like herding mini game. Just like no, it was like
that
princess.
Was absolutely essential to beat in the beast cannon at the end. Absolutely yeah, essential. Yeah. Could not be done without it.
So a lot of people are very pleased with what they've seen, and what I find interesting is that when they showed Skyward Sword, they also explained that the graphics was the last thing that they put really any polish onto, you know, like it was the last thing that they worked on. So I'm kind of interested to see if we see a, you know, dramatic improvement in what we've seen.
Yeah, or just a change, really. I mean, if they say it's 2015, it's
right.
difficult to imagine it's going to make it. On the one hand, like, you shouldn't have an overinflated view of how long the Wii U's timeline is, because mm-hmm. It could be shorter than other Nintendo consoles if things don't pick up as much as they need to. But at the same
right.
time, you know, there are other things. You know, there's a lot of stuff for 2015 that's sort of coming down, and so it's not as if they would have absolutely nothing else if they couldn't get Zelda in that year. And it just feels like I'd be very surprised if they could deliver, you know, something like promising a greater open world kind of experience. I mean, I think we're all familiar with just how buggy, you know, some of those games can be, with stuff like Elder Scrolls and Fallout, because they are very complicated. There are a lot of variables, and I think Nintendo especially, we're not above bugs, of course, after the Skyward Sword incident, but mm-hmm. They will be very reluctant to ship something out that's got to be patched a whole bunch of times. And then there's the design aspects and all that stuff. So I'd be incredibly surprised if it got into 2015. But
yeah,
in that
they also know that people will wait for it too.
Oh,
you know?
Well,
people will absolutely wait for it. It's not like that fan base is going anywhere.
You wouldn't have thought so, but I mean, I suppose it's just whether the Wii U is going to be kind of viable at that point, or whether it becomes like a Twilight Princess situation, even, is not unthinkable by that stage. But if that time that it would have to develop, if, you know, they could well tinker with the aesthetics a bit as well, you know, and so it could end up looking significantly different from what it looks like now. But I must say, it does look very nice at the moment.
It does.
Sort of a bit more high contrasty than Skyward Sword, you know, a bit more Wind Waker-ish.
Mm-hmm. And they showed the graphics. They didn't really talk about the gameplay. We have no idea if they're gonna use again the controls of Skyward Sword, or if they're gonna go the more traditional route. I would assume that they're gonna try to leverage the gamepad, because that's one of the criticisms, right? Like, that's one of the things that Nintendo needs to do, mm-hmm. is to justify the existence of the gamepad.
I think it's fair to say there was a lot more of that sort of stuff this year than there was last year.
Mario Maker, for example.
No, exactly. I mean, last year you had DKC, Mario Kart, Wind Waker HD, Super Mario 3D World. I mean, none of this stuff really did a lot with the game, but almost nothing in some cases.
Like, they're all good games. No one's saying they're not good games, but I've been enjoying them thoroughly in the interim. It's just Nintendo's business interest to actually do something with a gamepad.
You'd be forgiven for thinking they'd really soured on the whole idea lineup. But, this year it came back a lot more the Miyamoto concepts, obviously, were very, leveraging the different aspects. But even beyond that, you had Splatoon that we'll get to later on. You had
Kirby and the Rainbow Curse.
Yeah, that was it. Yep. That's exactly. It's a Canvas Curse sequel, that's very built around the fact that it's a touchscreen and all that kind of stuff, which was a really nice surprise. So, it's been a very different kind of show for suggesting that, yes, we are going to try and make something out of this stuff, but who knows? Maybe the pendulum will have swung back the other way by the time Zelda gets it.
I just got the feeling that they finally started using the gamepad in the obvious ways, and they weren't really trying to go out of their way to be too clever. And everybody's like, "Yes, thank you for using the gamepad in the obvious ways. That's totally cool. You don't have to blow us out of the water every single time you come out with a game. Just use the gamepad in ways that make sense, like Rainbow Curse. I saw that and I said." Exactly. Why did that not come out last year? That's one of the most obvious uses. Like, just a sequel to that game, which was one of the first games to really utilize the touchscreen for the DS. Mm-hmm. Of course, that makes perfect sense to have a sequel to that.
Yeah, I get the feeling that a lot of the gamepad uses that we're going to see in the traditional games is going to reflect what they've been doing on the DS and the 3DS. I mean, when you look at Zelda on the 3DS, what they've been doing is using that for inventory management.
Yeah.
Which just makes sense, right?
Yeah, like, And that was good in Wind Waker HD, to be fair. I mean, it's not as if it didn't, you could use the map and all that. Because it's not like the gamepad wasn't used at all. But, of course, it's fundamentally a GameCube game, so it's only so far you can go. But, even sort of like Mario Party 10. I mean, a lot of people just going to roll their eyes at another Mario Party, but the whole Bowser mode of that's actually the whole asymmetric multiplayer thing coming back, which again kind of seemed like they just canned that last year. They kind of seemed like they'd really soured on that. But, so they've kind of gone back to plugging away on that again. But, how successful that's going to be. It certainly will kind of, I think, quiet people speculating about the idea whether they're going to dump it, the way that Microsoft have dumped Kinect or something like that. I think it's it should certainly hold that back. Whether it actually makes inroads with the marketplace is another matter.
No, that's a good point. So yeah, so after that they showed the trailer for Pokemon Ruby and Sapphire remakes. It's coming out November 21st, which is later than Pokemon games usually come out in the year.
Yeah.
I don't really have much to say about this.
Well, the things have changed, haven't they? Because, I mean, with X and Y, it was the whole, it's global, simultaneous. For many, many years, it was that it would come out in Japan, and then it would be several months before it showed up anywhere else. And then, with X and Y, they got onto a kind of global synchronized cycle again. So, but yeah, that was interesting timing for me from the point of view that one of the things I was thinking about, going back to what I said at the very beginning, is what's that mystery 3DS game going to be? Because there's been all this talk about Harvest Time from Nintendo about 3DS. That we've built up the user base. Now is the time to start collecting the money from software sales. And so you're like, well, okay, what are you going to have this year to bring home the bacon? And of course, they've got Smash Bros. And they've got Pokemon, which are
big, big hitters, no doubt about that. But I was thinking, you know, there would be perhaps something announced at the show that we didn't know about before that would be a real big kind of title for this year on 3DS. Mm. And that didn't quite happen. Obviously, yeah. The mystery game ended up being the Steam game, which is next year. That's next year, so that wasn't it. And they had some little nuggets, you know, like Fantasy Life has been localized, and that's going to be coming out and stuff like that. But it wasn't exactly what I was thinking. So even though they've got, you know, two huge names for October and November, you can't argue with that. It's not quite as sort of multiple as I was expecting with all the harvest.
Yeah,
stuff.
It was pretty clear. It was all hands on deck for Wii U this year.
Yeah,
which makes sense. That makes sense.
Well, it makes sense. In one sense it does, and in one sense it very much doesn't. If you believe in not throwing good money after bad, it doesn't make sense at all. But you know, they think they could still salvage the Wii U in some way. So obviously that's where they're going.
Yeah, and they right. I'm sure they look at it like 3DS doesn't really need help right now.
Yeah, except you know? It kind of does though, because there's so little support from what we've seen. All the developers that support it, from what I've seen, are still, you know, Natsume and Atlas, and I'm not saying
Japanese.
A whole lot of...
Of course, no. I mean, the Western third-party support for the 3DS has been over almost since that 2011 E3. It really hasn't been there since...
Ubisoft, who had, several games at launch, there were ports or there were Rabbids games, but still...
Everybody got out. I mean, even on DS, it soured after the boom, you know, and you could talk about mobile gaming and all that stuff, you know, we've all talked about that plenty of times. It's just, it's not going to happen very much with third party support from Western developers. So it is incumbent on Nintendo to keep churning out the games themselves. And indeed, you know, what they're doing with Fantasy Life, which is taking something that Level 5 made in Japan and bring it over. I'm still quite surprised that we couldn't get something out of Nintendo in terms of bringing a Dragon Quest game over, Rocket Slime or Set the Seven remake or so. Yeah, but as more time goes on, it just seems like that's just not going to happen, I guess. But I was surprised that they didn't have something a little bit more current, you know, for 3DS. But as I said, they have burn through a lot of the obvious stuff quite quickly because the new Super Mario Brothers 2 would not naturally have come out when it did, but they did come out then because they were scrambling to save the system while they still had a chance.
Yeah, same with Mario Kart 7. It kind of had this feeling of, we got to get this out now.
Yeah, and so they put Retro on it and helped kind of speed things along and all that. Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I guess in that sense, you know, maybe they feel like, we really sort of burned up a storm on 3DS at one point. So, that, this is kind of the sort of logical flip side of that.
Then there was a Bayonetta 2 trailer. That game has been a long time coming. It's finally coming out in October 2014. It just looks spectacular, and I've seen a lot of positive buzz on the show floor. People say it's just jaw-dropping, and it's a lot of fun to play. I've seen some people from usgamer.net saying, "Oh, it's my game, Nintendo game of the show." Actually,
And it includes the first game, correct?
It does. That was one of the big surprises of that trailer.
Yeah, that's really cool.
They then went on to show off whatever her name is, Bayonetta, right?
Yeah.
And so in Samus and Peach and Link costumes, and so that's part of Bayonetta 1, which is included with the retail release of Bayonetta 2. Actually, no, they've specified it's with whether you buy it in a store on the eShop, you're going to be able to download the first game.
Yeah, so I guess it's not on the disc, but you're getting it either way. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, see, it's great though, because I actually have an unopened 360 copy of the first game, so I can keep it sealed, which makes me super happy.
Oh, yeah.
Now, it's interesting, because, I mean, my interest in this game kind of went up after playing The Wonderful 101, because that was actually the first Platinum Games product I played. I bought Mad World, but then discovered it was the shitty PAL version that was.
Yes, I remember
so,
that.
Remember that? So I just traded it in and never played, and then didn't get round to importing the NTSC version when I had the chance. You know, and I played Clover games, of course, like Okami and Beautiful Joe, but not any of these. And Bayonetta was always sort of tempted to try, but of course I was a PS3 owner. Mm-hmm. And that version was meant to be awful. But then by the time that you so generously gave me a 360, it was a bit sort of passé. I still haven't played it. And, like I said, Wonderful 101 isn't by no means not exactly the same genre as Bayonetta, but it has quite a few things in common. There's a character action style element to it, and I'm not necessarily huge on those games, but you know, having enjoyed that component of Wonderful 101, you know, being made by the same developers, it kind of made me think a lot more seriously about Bayonetta. And then the fact that you're getting both games, you know, certainly enhances the value proposition. And
I had been thinking of downloading even the crappy PlayStation 3 version just because, just to catch up.
I played the demo of it. I don't know whether it got patched after the demo, maybe got a bit less terrible, but the screen tearing and the frame rate and the, it's just, and I mean, it's been sort of, that version's been kind of publicly disavowed by
in this version, they actually, Platinum just went and got some former members of the team that made the first Bayonetta. So, like, they're taking this port seriously, even though I can't imagine that they're making a lot of money off of it.
No, it seems like a kind of matter of principle or pride or something, but it does make sense. You know, I don't know how many people would have been legitimately put off. Yeah, because they probably are going to be, you know, Nintendo only kind of people that might consider getting it. That couldn't play it before, but then it's like, do you want to just get in at the second one? I have no idea how important the story is to the game.
It seems like nonsense. I'm watching the trailer and I'm thinking, yeah, I'm going to be skipping those. Like, I'm not going to know, even after I play Bayonetta 2, I'm not going to know what it's about because I'm not going to watch this.
I take one look at it and I'm like, that's the kind of game that probably has a terrible story, but whatever.
Yeah, it's going to be fun to play. Yep. I had fun last E3 doing whatever it was. Like, the demo was...
whatever I was doing. It was fun.
Yeah, mashing the buttons, playing on easy.
Yeah.
But I'm looking forward to mastering the game. Mm-hmm. Next, the Nintendo Digital event went on to talk about Hyrule Warriors, which I have very little interest in. It does seem like this... Yeah, like this kind of layer of Zelda applied to a Dynasty Warriors game.
Yeah.
And they added some bosses, so that's kind of new for that series. It does have two-player co-op, someone on the gamepad, someone on the TV.
Yeah, I think I think that's big for this sort of game, because the brawler style of game, that kind of action, I think it benefits a lot from co-op, and that kind of co-op where it's in the same room, but not kind of compromised experience of split screen. That seems like it would be the best way to experience this kind of game.
Right. Nintendo got some positive buzz just for having like half the roster of playable characters is women. And for some reason that actually got talked about just because the rest of E3 showings were just so bad about representation.
Yeah. Yep. Ubisoft especially talking. Yeah, Ubisoft, some of the comments they made were not well received and made them look like complete morons.
Yeah, so I don't think that Nintendo would have especially, drawn attention to that from anyone. Like, I don't think people would have paid attention to that if not for the fact that other people were doing quite poorly at E3 in terms of representation.
But that's okay. That's good for them. Yeah. I mean, good on them. You know?
Yeah. So that part of the Nintendo Direct, I thought, like, they didn't really say much. Like, it was just the developers saying, oh, we grew up playing Legend of Zelda, so it was an honor. We were scared to tackle it, and it was quite an honor, blah, blah, blah. They didn't really share any juicy tidbits. So that tells me that, yes, Dynasty Warrior, and I'm going to skip it.
Yeah.
So next, Kirby and the Rainbow Curse. We already mentioned it. Mm-hmm. It's on Wii U. It's another thing that I had dreamed that Nintendo would make. And,
I gotta be honest, I kind of like always felt like when 3DS came out, the fact that the 3D screen was the main screen, I always have, you know, that games like Canvas Curse, you weren't going to get them, you know, and so you weren't going to see a Canvas Curse sequel. And then by the time the Wii U was coming out, I didn't even entertain the notion.
Yeah.
For whatever, right. Evo, you could have done it. It was easily sort of, you could imagine it, but for whatever reason, I didn't. So just the idea of a sequel, and it will, by the time it comes out, it's another 2015 game, it would be 10 years. Won't it?
Yes.
Since the original, is something I did not expect at all. A real treat out of left field from my point of view, anyway.
Yeah, they didn't really show anything that was not in the original game, which is a little bit disappointing, given that, yeah, it's been 10 years. But I'm sure that they'll reveal their new ideas that they've had for the concept, over time. And I'm sure that the full game's going to have, you know, lots of things that we didn't see in the DS game. One thing that they did change is the art style. Now it's all claymation,
yeah.
And it's particularly striking mm-hmm. when you're fighting that tree that you fight in every Kirby game. it really, like, they really went all in for that style, like the tree puffs up his cheeks, and you can really see, like, yes, this is clay. It's the same kind of principle that, that's behind Yoshi's Woolly World. But yeah, so we already talked about it. There's some Kirby Transforms, and this is coming out next year. All right, so let's take a break, and we come back after the short break, and we're going to talk about more Nintendo stuff, because there's still plenty to talk about.
Here's a quick look at the best original content at our website, now playing at NintendoWorldReport.com.
Guys, are you seriously wondering what's new this week? I mean, there are 3 pages full of E3 stuff. 3 pages full of news, interviews, videos, previews. It's all great content, there's tons of it, and still more is being added as I'm recording this. So guys, like, it's E3. Go visit NintendoWorldReport.com. And we're back! And so we're going to continue where we left off. There's still some Nintendo Direct stuff to talk about. And then E3 did not stop there. So I think we're good for another hour.
Yeah. Yep.
We stopped. We were about to talk about Xenoblade Chronicles. And
Chronicles X. That's
X. Yeah. would have liked a little bit of a better name there.
Is that what they called it everywhere?
It was originally X, right? The code mm-hmm. name for this game was X. Of course, Xenoblade in Japan, but when it was localized to Europe and America, it was Xenoblade Chronicles, because I guess they felt like they needed to make it sound like an RPG. Xenoblade mm-hmm. probably sounds more like a Warriors game or something to them. So
yeah,
they put Chronicles, that sounds like faffy RPG nonsense. Good. And now, for this, X has become Xenoblade Chronicles X. So the name has got sort of diluted twice over. But yeah, I mean, it's an exciting project, of course. And we didn't see too much more of it, really.
What we did see is some story stuff. And that's personally not what I would choose to present at E3. But that's just me. Because what they've shown is this Japanese trailer, subtitled. And lots of anime sci-fi nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you've got this acronym, BLADE, Beyond the Logos Artificial Destiny Emancipator.
Kojima would be proud of that one.
have no idea, like, what this refers to. Like, is it the alien enemy? Is it the ship? Is it some sort of artificial intelligence? Like, we know that Logos is, like, the Greek for the word of God or whatever. Like, it's pretentious.
It's the kind of thing, I mean, that you've just going back to story Xenoblade and all that. It's not the kind of thing that you really want to sort of take a slice out of it. You know, it's one thing when it kind of builds up on top of you over the course of many, many hours. You kind of, you know, you, even with sort of convoluted sort of anime-style stuff, it's easier to process it and kind of, you know, because it just sort of, like I said, it builds up on top of you over a long time. Taking a sort of slice into it, I mean, you know, if you're more into that kind of stuff than I am, you might be fine. But yeah, I don't know whether it was the most impactful sort of thing. But
no,
I guess
the main thing
was just to have some kind of presence for it, you know, to say that, you know, it's on course, it's going to be 2015, mm-hmm. all that kind of stuff. Really,
yeah. That's the angle that I wish they had taken, you know, just have the director talk a little bit about it and show off some of the vistas that you're going to be exploring and show off the combat, because mm-hmm. that's what's really interesting about this game, in my opinion.
Well, going back to Xenoblade, for me, you know, and I've said this a number of times, you know, when I was playing it on the show and whatnot, you know, it wasn't the story that kept sort of stringing me along, it was the journey. Mm-hmm. And that is going to be, mm-hmm. I would assume, you know, for me and perhaps others, but the same thing here, you know, kind of places is this going to take you to?
They have been streaming on Twitch. The Treehouse has been streaming on Twitch some gameplay, so they've shown off the environments, the combat, the enemies, so gigantic creatures that you take on with just a sword and some guns, and it's very much the same scope as Xenoblade, except now in high definition, the same kind of day and night cycle and weather effects. And so it's very much the same art style and the same, they're going for the same vibe here.
Yeah, on the art style, even with the character faces. Mm-hmm. It's mm-hmm. obviously it's been more detailed than what it was on the Wii, but it is still, you could tell it's still the same aesthetic, you know. It's not like with the additional power they've decided to like really change the style particularly much. Although I suppose one of the interesting things that we did sort of discover is just the fact that the main character will be one of your own customized creation, you know.
Right.
It could just
yeah,
be
it can
any
be
gender,
a man
anyways.
Or a woman. Yeah, like any gender, any you know, skin color.
Which is a significant change from Xenoblade, because yeah, that was very much a specific character.
Yeah, so I wonder, like, did they record a lot of different voices for it? Did they? I don't know. Like, I hope it's not a silent protagonist, right?
I don't know that for certain.
Yeah, I'm not
just
sure
from
either.
What I've seen, but I have not. Mm-hmm. For instance, I haven't seen the stuff that you're referring to on the Twitch stream or anything yet. So
right, I was only paying half attention, I guess, to who was talking, since it was, you know, all Japanese. You could have muted it and still gotten the main gist of what was happening.
Yeah, it didn't make any sense anyway. So you know,
but it wouldn't make sense to have a silent protagonist. I think it's not Monolith Soft's, you know, kind of. That's not what they usually go for. So. Anyway, it's very impressive, and I'm looking forward to it, but yeah, the story had me cringe a little bit.
Yeah.
They showed off another surprise, a first look at Mario Maker.
Well, yeah, the surprise somewhat less than it would have been had it not been the photo that was taken of the display that got out a bit early.
Yep.
Like Nintendo managed to keep a lot of secrets under wraps, but this one escaped just with that picture of, you know, days before E3 when they were setting up their booth. So, I don't know. So, yeah, people were debating, is this fake? Is this real? Turns out it's real. And so we've seen it in action. It is, you know, a tool that you use to create Mario 1 levels. And you can do a lot of things that you've never seen in Super Mario Brothers. Like you can put wings on any enemy, even the piranha plants. You can, I don't know, you've got this weird like skinny mushroom that makes a skinny Mario. And Tezuka revealed during the Twitch stream that this like came out of a bug in the tools that they've been using, and they decided to just keep it because it was funny.
Yeah, they love doing stuff like that. That's how the double cherry got started, wasn't it? In the 3D world, it was some sort of mistake where the character
got
duplicated, and then they thought, oh, actually, this is a great idea. We'll use this as a barrel.
Oh, that's awesome. On Twitch, actually, they've revealed a lot of the genesis of the game. Turns out that it was Nintendo's internal, like the people who developed their internal tools, who had been working on this, and usually they don't create the levels themselves. but they had been having a lot of fun with this, and so they brought it to Tezuka. And Tezuka had been thinking about doing some sort of Mario Paint sequel or Mario Paint app for the gamepad. But then he saw this and thought, well, instead of just making Mario Paint, let's take this and bring elements of Mario Paint in it to try to make it fun, you know, bring the same functionalities and the same kind of, you know, quirks that Mario Paint had, and you know, that will be the software. So it's very interesting, and I guess, you know, some of the questions that we have is that what are they going to do with it, you know, before release in 2015? You know, like, are they going to add some Mario 2, Mario 3 elements? Are they, I don't know, are we going to be able to share levels online? I mean, Mario versus DK on the Wii U will be able to share levels on the Miiverse, so...
I think it's kind of essential, really, is it? Surely, I mean, yeah. Because a lot of people, as fans of everything, user-generated content into the equation, there's just going to be a lot of people that kind of leech. Right. Yeah, that's going to be a lot of what they might toy with the creation tools, but really what you're going to want is a way to have a lot of the more dedicated, more active users that put up really incredible creations. So you want those to be accessible to all the players. At least, could serve as inspiration to sort of go back to the drawing board and maybe try and make something yourself, you know? So I think it's how exactly they're going to do it, we haven't seen yet, but it's got to be essential to making something like this, to capitalizing on the full appeal of the concept.
Yep. Yeah, now that I think about it, it's kind of a foregone conclusion. And after all, they did allow people to share levels of their mini games that they made and the WarioWare, you know.
Yeah, DIY.
Wario.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, and that was, you know, with a much more primitive online setup. So
the WiiWare channel, wasn't it? You know, case for people to experience the things that were made on DS.
Right. So yeah, it's probably we'll see online sharing, but yeah, this is very exciting. Let's move on to this completely new IP that Nintendo came up with and completely took people by surprise. Splatoon on the Wii U, which is an online 4-on-4 tactical shooter, I guess. Not tactical, but anyway, 4-on-4 online shooter.
Mm-hmm.
And John, do you want to talk about it?
Yeah,
John,
sure. It was
John shooting projectile correspondent, yes. John Lindemann. Would you like to weigh in?
straight
That's really pigeonhole you.
Straight from the front lines. My trigger finger is getting itchy just thinking about it. yeah, so this is exactly the kind of thing, really, this was my highlight of the show for me, because this is exactly the kind of thing that I wanted to see from Nintendo. Coming into this E3, I said, well, Nintendo needs to make something. I said a first-person shooter, but really, what I've been getting at for a long time with Nintendo is just do something. They have a huge gap in the shooter genre, and they, more than any other company, could turn it right on its head. I hear people complaining a lot about shooters are just, they're always like some big hulking space marine or some macho, you know, broed out kind of sort of thing, and people are sick of it, and it's, you know, especially this E3 where a lot of stuff, you know, from companies other than Nintendo was very dark, gritty, warfare, all that kind of stuff. This is exactly the kind of thing Nintendo can come in and turn this stuff on its head. They can take a genre and totally flip it around and do whatever they want with it. And when I saw this, I said, this is brilliant, because what they're doing is they're taking it, instead of having you shoot somebody else, they're having the warfare be sort of against the environment, and you're trying to take out the other team but not in a violent way.
Right.
Which I thought was brilliant.
Yeah, you can still shoot them down. That is kind of a distraction to your main objective, which
exactly.
is splatter paint everywhere.
The territory.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, but of course, you know, taking people out presumably makes it a lot easier to win territory, you know, because they're not able to splash their paint around when you take them out. I haven't seen all the rules or anything, but no, I mean, I agree with John very much that this is something that I think a lot of people have been waiting to see from Nintendo for many years, really. I mean,
the idea that, well, you know, can you do for a sort of competitive shooter what Nintendo has done to racing with Mario Kart, to fighting games with Smash Brothers? You know, and obviously it remains to be seen, you know, the final product, whether they'll be able to do it, but it seems like, you know, that kind of thing, in the sense that, yeah, you know, it is bright and colourful and these cute little characters compared to the gritty, edgy stuff, but also in the gameplay, you know, putting a kind of less like violent spin on it, for sure, but still kind of, you know, taking some of the what's fundamentally fun about those games and just packaging them a little differently and maybe making it a bit more instant. I mean, I think the big thing about the mechanic of spraying the territory with ink and then that allows you to move through it much more quickly is that it can make, I think, this sort of game a bit more sort of instant and flow a bit better. It's something that my limited experience with these games can be kind of a bit tedious is the traversal. And one thing I actually talked about many years ago now, when I played the Transformers game for PS3, War for Cybertron, is that I like the way that you could transform into, you know, the vehicle and traverse the environment quickly and then get back into the shooting.
Yeah,
and it's a similar thing that's going on here with transforming into the squid and moving through the ink, except you've got the fact that you've got to sort of win the territory to sort of have the right to do that. So you've got a bit more of a strategy element to it as well. And then you've got to get the gamepad is factoring in terms of giving you the bird's eye view of the map, and you can do some kind of fast traveling, like warp to teammates as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's very interesting. Very intriguing.
It seems like it's very streamlined. Like, there's a lot of things that kind of first-person shooters nowadays, like, you know, Greg talked about being able to use the gamepad to kind of fast travel across the map. Well, you see that in other first-person shooters, except it's kind of a perk that you earn to put a spawn point down wherever you want, so your teammates can spawn around you. And they're kind of getting rid of that baggage. They're just tossing it and saying, you know what? You can just go across the map. You want to go across the map? Go across the map. So what I expect from this is I expect a lot of quick matches, like a very, very fast pace. And I think that's going to kind of set it apart. And I think it's going to be really different and really fun.
But I did like the sort of slightly, so it's a cute, it's sort of cute and colourful as it is compared to my shooters. Something quite chilling about the bit where you just sort of go in through the ink and just emerge behind someone and then blast them with pain. It's like it's a very colourful version of the T-1000 just taking someone out.
Yep.
Yeah, it's pretty clever. Like, I had always pictured that if Nintendo were to ever make a shooter, like, it would be something non-violent, like Mario Paintball or something, but I never really expected, you know, this kind of inventiveness, because I guess that's why I'm not a game designer, and that's why Nintendo is Nintendo. But, yeah, like, you can, you know, if you break a segment, like, let's say that the enemy has painted the whole hall, like, and can traverse it very quickly. You just spray your paint in the middle and you stop them dead in their tracks, and then you've got this choke point. Or there's the stealth element, as you said, that when you go in and out of the paint. And it's very exciting. And I guess it is remarkable that they kind of, you know, resisted the urge to make this one of their existing franchises, because that's what you see a lot usually with Nintendo. They're kind of
I've said this before, but, you know, I think it's kind of when people say, "Oh, Nintendo doesn't do anything original," it's like, well, they've done plenty of stuff that's original. They just don't use original characters. You know, a lot of them, they will slap something. You know, I mean, Kid Icarus is a great example. You know, that was a totally different game, the kind of game. They hadn't made a game like that before. It mixes rail shooting with this third person shooter kind of gameplay, but they just happened to put Pit on it, so people forget that was an original game, you know, because it's an original game in design.
It is,
yeah.
But in this case, you know, at least it seems like they're getting the full credit for the originality of this game by making it these, you know, these cute little squid girls instead of an existing Nintendo character.
Well, what also really surprised me was the high profile that they gave this game in their booth, and just overall. I mean, from what I've read, their booth was basically
Smash Brothers,
Splatoon, and like a little corner for everything else. So, I mean, they seem to be putting some marketing muscle behind this game, which is good to see, because this is the kind of thing where this could probably appeal to an audience that maybe would like to try first-person shooters, or perhaps have been interested at one point, maybe they're lapsed first-person shooter players, or people that just got tired of maybe the learning curve, or maybe the environment of other first-person shooters.
Mm-hmm. No, and but I mean, really,
could really draw in a different audience.
For me, this is territory that they've sort of had before, in the sense that you go back to the popularity of GoldenEye and Perfect Dark on the N64.
Time splitters.
A shooter that has that could sort of function a bit as a party game. For lack of a better word, that is a part of the market that they had cornered on the N64. Then, of course, once Rare left and all that, they started to kind of lose it, and they never did this before. They never said, "All right, let's do our own take that takes it even further." Obviously, GoldenEye and Perfect Dark did things to kind of make it more suitable as a split-screen multiplayer game than PC shooters, would be if you just literally ported those. But, this is taking it much further and in the kind of, make it more instant and more colorful and, maybe more appropriate for families or whatever. But, for me, this just seems like the kind of territory that's been there to be had for a good long while now, and they're finally getting around to it. It's still really kind of, it's something, it's not necessarily my kind of game, but I'm still really interested to see how it turns out, and it may be something that I'll enjoy.
Yeah, I'm curious about I think the core game concept is sound. I'm just wondering how much depth, how they can make it last.
Yeah, I'm not that worried about that, because it is another 2015 game, so it's they've got some time to add to it, and they've already shown different types of weapons. You've got these paint rollers or paint bazookas, or grenades. So there's you don't only have your water gun, and I don't know. They've got lots of time to work on it, and I find it remarkable that this is, as far as I know, I'm not the most knowledgeable person when it comes to first person shooters, but as far as I know, this is not in direct competition with anything that exists right now. You've got right now shooters are either super gritty, or they're chasing the Call of Duty crowd, or they're free to play, and they might have crazy cartoony characters, but you're going to be, shooting the crap out of each other and trying to level up and to get perks. And, hopefully you're going to send the developer some money in terms of DLC or, trying to upgrade your character. Mm-hmm. So this is, absolutely none of those things. And the art style is very distinctive. And, it was so shocking to see. And, I am too, a little bit, wondering how can they add the depth that this game needs to be played over and over again.
No, I mean, because it seems like, if you're in a situation where, you had a room, I don't know whether you could do, a room with yourself and somebody else going online together and all that kind of stuff. You've got a bit of that local plus online kind of thing. It seems like it'd be an absolute riot, but I guess the question is, what is there? Obviously, sort of campaign modes have been the sort of dwindling significance in mainstream shooter games these days, but it'd be for Nintendo, it'd be interesting to see how they handle that component of it. You're trying to give it, because it is a squad shooter, so how do you make any kind of compelling single player content? It's kind of a tough nut to crack.
Yep. Yeah, and I believe a little bit more in the chances of an online only shooter on the Wii U now that Mario Kart is out, because before then, who was playing online on a Wii U, right? Like just Monster Hunter people, and that was it. Yep. But now Mario Kart Online, it's very easy to find opponents, and people are probably going to be glued to their Wii Us for a while. And I'm a little bit more hopeful about this game's chances.
Yeah, I'm curious to see where they go with it.
Yeah. So that was basically the way that they ended their Nintendo Direct. Then they had some reveal about Lady Pelutina being playable character in Smash Brothers, and then you at the very end you had Miyamoto talking about what he was working on, And it was funny because the Time magazine had leaked the existence of Star Fox for the Wii U, and then, you know, after hours realized, oh, we goofed, and then
Time magazine, in exquisite irony, apparently had not mastered time zones.
Yeah, they're not time zone magazines, so
they did not know the difference between Eastern and Pacific, which, you know. I have to deal with that kind of stuff every time I recorded this show. You know, come on, boys.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like, the people were expecting the Star Fox reveal the whole time. And then,
it doesn't really come.
Like, yeah, and you can see that that's what Miyamoto is playing, except that they obscured the screen, so we're not supposed to know yet. And we've later learned during E3 that it's very, very early. Like, it's basically a prototype, and they were shopping around to get a developer to work on it.
Yeah, and they were only showing it to, like, select media. It wasn't on the floor, and they weren't showing it to everybody. You know, it was kind of, some people got to see it being demonstrated, I guess.
Yeah, I think he said it was, like a year off from having really anything to show to people? Because
I think that was interesting, wasn't it? On the one hand, this is, like, at such an early stage. Yeah, much earlier than a whole host of other games that are scheduled to come out in 2015. And yet they were also saying, in a year, it'll be done. I'm not buying it.
Yeah.
I'm not, if it's that early.
I mean, I don't buy
if
that,
you still
really,
haven't even but... got the actual team in place that's going to do the heavy lifting on development, how on earth can you promise that it'll be done in a year? I think that's a bit rich, to say the least. But you know, let's not forget that it's very joyous news that there is a new Star Fox game.
Oh, of course.
Because if it were to come out next year, it would be 9 years hence from Star Fox Command.
Well,
so that's plenty of time.
Well, see, this was funny. I forget where I read this, but there was something, somebody said something about, from Nintendo, they said, yeah, you know, we had been kicking around the idea for Star Fox for 5 or 6 years. So that just gives you an idea of how things work at Nintendo. It just seems, they know people want a certain game, but I feel like, I was thinking about this, and I feel like there are several kind of god-tier franchises at Nintendo that they will pretty much come out with every year or so, no matter what. No matter whether or not they can really deliver a truly new experience. And then, you know, like Pokemon, Mario, stuff like that. Those huge ones, right? But then there's like kind of like this B-tier of like Metroid, Star Fox, where it's like they will only bring it out if they have something absolutely new that they can do with it.
Well, and also just
regardless of what anybody wants.
And it also seems like there has to be a certain momentum to it, and that was interesting. Some of the comments that were made by Miyamoto and so forth suggested that they almost did this to force themselves to actually get on with it. Like, it was like, well, we're putting it out there, we're saying, it's going to be done in a year, because otherwise, like, maybe the momentum won't be there to actually get it done. So, like, this is us kind of committing to commit. You know, like, it's pretty odd situation. But, you know, what little there was to glean from, you know, what the reports of what was being shown was really that, you know, they're using the gamepad for Star Fox in such a way that movement and shooting have been decoupled.
Right.
Which, of course, you know, is interesting because, you know, that's one of the things, you know, that was unique about Sin and Punishment, is that you had those things separated without the gamepad. And I guess that's for me, I have to be convinced that separating it by kind of, you're steering the ship with the analog stick on the gamepad, but then you're kind of looking around on this cockpit view using the motion sensing capabilities of the gamepad, whether that's really better than a Wii Remote and Nunchuk in Sin
Punishment
2.
Yeah, did I read that there was also some idea of co-op play where someone would be basically the turret, the gunner,
And someone else would be piloting. No, I saw that. That makes play, you know, I'm amazed. I mean, there's a litany of these you could go through, I guess, but like Star Wars games that should be on Wii U, you know, kind of the Millennium Falcon scene where Luke's shooting the TIE fighters and then somebody else's hand. Like, you know, these things do need to happen, but maybe Star Fox could get there first in that regard.
Nintendo, Nintendo shopping around for a developer, that does raise the question, what is Q Games doing?
Yeah, Q Games, yeah. Although I guess this is a little bit out of their, you know, ballpark, maybe of working on the, you know, a game potentially of this game. We don't know what kind of scale it really is, I guess, yet, but...
Right, yeah, I guess they do have perhaps limited resources. They're porting right now their games to Vita, and like their pixel junk games, so like, yeah, their 3D, yeah, side scrolling games.
Obviously they did Star Fox 64 3D, you know, there is that, but that's, you know, long, you know, it's not nearly as complicated as, because first of all the game already existed, and second of all, you know, you're talking about a big jump up in complexity when you go to,
yeah,
console development like that. So yeah, I mean, it's not straightforward. I'm sure there are, you know, Treasure maybe, but again, they haven't really worked on that scale before. Platinum have made noises about doing Star, mm-hmm, Fox before, but they're making, right, like a, you know, the a game for the, is it both the other systems or
no, it's a Xbox One exclusive.
Yeah, right, that's an Xbox One exclusive, so they're gonna be, I don't know what kind of bandwidth they've got to be doing anything else with Nintendo.
Yeah.
So, but and I'm sure there's many more sort of less obvious candidates that could
retro
do it, but,
retro maybe,
yeah, I would assume they've probably got something else to do.
I would assume so too, but
who knows.
I throw it out there.
But I think you know, what's interesting about it is, you know, so some of these things would very much apply to the all range mode kind of stuff, you know, mm-hmm, and they've talked about being able to transform into the tank on the fly, which recalls the unreleased Star Fox 2 for Super Nintendo, where you could transform into a sort of walker thing. It wasn't a tank, it had legs, but similar idea. That was something that didn't really get into Star Fox Command, which obviously did draw on that unreleased game too. So, you know, what kind of balance would they be having? You know, because I did quite like Star Fox Command, but I thought it would have benefited a lot more from traditional Star Fox action being interspersed,
rather than
just so dominated by all range mode. So on the one hand, I think it's cool that they've got these ideas that could make all range mode more interesting. But on the other hand, I think you have to incorporate those roller coasters, those, you know, really high octane,
yeah,
on rails action into a Star Fox game to really satisfy what fan base there is for the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's why I think Treasure would be a prime candidate. Just,
I mean, you could engage multiple developers to do the different parts, and
yeah,
I mean, also some of Miyamoto's other things that he was showing, like Project Guard and Robot. You know, some thought that they,
right,
might get folded into a Star Fox game as some sort of alternate modes or different, you know, if there's like that sort,
yeah,
of strategy,
yeah,
game component that Command had, it could kind of work,
yeah,
its way in there, but like those missile missions or something.
Right. Let's talk about Project Giant Robot and Project Guard. These are two new IPs that Miyamoto is working on, and quite frankly, this was not shown at the Nintendo Digital event. They just trotted that out at the Treehouse later on. Quite frankly, they seem to be a little bit bare bones, and they did seem to me like something that you would see in the Nintendo Land 2. Project Guard is this kind of new take on the tower defense, where you will have 12 cameras. You set them up before an onslaught, a wave of enemies coming up, and so the player on the gamepad can aim a laser, you know, and attach to one of those cameras. And the people around you, you can look at the TV screen and you see these thumbnails of all the cameras. And, you know, if you've got people with you, they can shout at you, okay, camera 2, and then you switch to camera 2 and you shoot whatever is there, and then you move to the next one.
Yeah.
So it
sounds like Sliver Tower Defense for your early 90s movie fans.
Yeah. Oh, Greg. God bless you, Sliver. Sharon Stone's finest, right there.
I was 9 years old when that film came out. It's really not.
Apparently, you were old enough.
It's not in my wheelhouse at all. But the reference came to me. What can I say?
Yeah, and it kind of reminds me of what's that game, Night Trap?
I think Johnny made some reference to that somewhere. I think, it's a fair point. It was around about the same time as well. But that was what was with that era? Jesus.
Yeah, really.
So, yeah, in this case, again, like I think that the concept is a little bit thin, and I'm not sure it could sustain the whole game. But you mentioned maybe like it could be rolled into a full Star Fox game, and there were apparently Star Fox logos on the cameras.
Yeah,
so
this
is something that they're already considering.
No, it makes like I said, you had these in Star Fox 2 again, which didn't get released, and then Command, which had like sort of quite a lot of it. You know, these sort of little strategic kind of elements, which were you kind of you know competing for territory with Andross's forces or whatever, and like some. Sometimes a missile would come along, you'd have to take that out. Like that could, you know, these could be events mm-hmm. put into that kind of context, maybe. But I mean, again, Star Fox is so far away, and like you said, these are fairly sort of, you know, just sort of concepts at this point. It could go any number of different ways, couldn't it? I mean, it's just, I guess it's just their way of saying, again, I think. Helping to put a bit of a lid on this idea of like, oh, maybe they're going to jump off the gamepad. I think that's kind of one of the major utilities is Joe. Yeah, Miyamoto's working on crazy stuff that's not just New Super Mario Brothers or, you know, the traditional kind of stuff they've been pounding lately. And also to say, yeah, we're still all in on the gamepad, so don't bang that drum anymore.
Right. You had the Project Giant Robot, which is very descriptive. You play as a giant robot, and so in a city, and you fight other giant robots, and the gameplay seemed to be very, very much like sumo. You tried to take down your opponent by making them trip and fall and avoid losing your balance yourself. And I did not really pay too much attention to the demo. I guess you were using the control sticks to move your left and right arms. And when I was watching people playing, they were very much twisting the gamepad around, like almost vertically, like almost completely on its side to try to, as if to simulate putting weight, you know, on their left or right side and try to, you know, push their opponent that way. I guess it's interesting, but personally, I've never been that big of a fan of motion controls. I like the Wii, but it was always more about the pointing than the flailing around.
Just making things sort of more fluid rather than kind of play acting aspect, which was more the waggle angle. I mean, with this, I think a common thread between both of these projects, I think, is the idea that it is fun for people to watch you doing this stuff. Or in the case of the CCTV game, they can actually help you, you know, because they can point out like, okay, look at this one or whatever. So yeah, this kind of, you know, audience participation or, you know, just audience enhancement of a game, you know, the living room, a family together, you know, where one person's actually playing, but it kind of includes other people and makes it fun and all that. You know, that is an idea I think they really like. And they kind of hit that with the Wii Rhythm Heaven a bit, you know. It is something, especially, you know, with the Wii U as well, like the kind of difference between the gamepad and the main screen. I mean, it's kind of the idea with Scram Kitty, isn't it? A little bit, but it's fairly sort of... the other display is for like
have something people. To entertain people around you, and then you focus on what's on the gamepad.
Yeah,
and...
so I mean, it's an idea I think that Nintendo likes. You know, I'm not sure they've really kind of hit on it 100% yet, but you know, I think this shows that they're going to keep trying.
Right. So I don't know. I kind of expect this to be part of a compilation, just like the Shield Pose demo.
We got it to Game & Wario. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So yeah. Wow. Time flies fast. So let's move on. Okay. So they did show after the direct Mario Party 10. The most interesting thing about it was probably the asynchronous multiplayer.
Asymmetric multiplayer.
Asymmetrical. Right. Sorry.
And, so asynchronous multiplayer is like chess by mail.
Well, who knows? Maybe that's their online mode for Mario Party.
Yeah, Mario Party by mail. It's brilliant. Mailing each other your next move on the board. I got a six on the dice. All right, your move.
Yeah. So yeah, they've shown Mario and DK for and Donkey Kong for Wii U. This was shown a couple of months ago at what event again? Like the was it the Games Developers Conference? I think that they were showing off the fact, their Unity engine.
Oh, right, right. Okay. It was like a proof of concept kind of thing, wasn't it? That they had that there, and at that time they were saying, oh no, this isn't a game yet or anything, wasn't it?
Right.
It was just to say, yep, this is what you can do when you know you're kind of running games through that on Wii U, and now, unsurprisingly, it is a game.
It doesn't seem to add too many things to the Mario versus DK formula. I guess that the fact that it's for the first time it's on a console, it did let them create wider play fields. But that might be, I don't know, that might not be a selling point for me. That might be more annoying than anything else.
Yeah, again, I mean, I guess just because the social features on Wii U are the best developed that they've ever been on a Nintendo console, then, you know, again, going back to what we said about Mario Maker, you know, you can integrate that stuff better than it's been before. And so they've had custom level design in the Mario and DK game since Mario vs. DK 2, right? I think the first DS one, I believe, had a level editor.
I think you might be right.
But of course, again, you know, back there, certainly, you know, on the DS, they had that, you know, so many years ago now. You have to say, you know, the infrastructure for sharing those levels then was not great. And so, yeah, you know, I think this certainly, you know, with Miiverse, and they've shown like how you get like different stamps for, you know, in the process of like creating things and stuff, you know, it's definitely trying to make more of a integrated active community around this kind of game. So
yeah,
it may not
be
particularly sort of, you know, changing up the concept very much, but it could easily be the best realization of that concept that you've seen.
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah,
the latest game should always be the most fully fresh, better realized concept.
It's just the user. It's really the user generated aspect of it, you know, because it has been there before. It's not entirely new.
Right. I guess the extent to which you could express your, you know, approval of a, you know, user design level was you could rate them, you know, 1 to 5 stars in previous games. Now you can actually leave a message on Miiverse. So there's a little bit more back and forth. There's maybe, I don't know. Yeah, it's interesting. And I do think that Miiverse opens up some possibilities, like actually giving and receiving feedback and improving the level that you've created.
Yeah, certainly the way that you can share stuff on Miiverse is very, very well suited to what it's trying to do.
Right. I guess one of the, the last game that I want to touch on really is the game that they've revealed last night outside. This was not streamed at first, and then today they've been showing it off on you know, the part of the Treehouse Twitch stream, and it's their codename Steam project, which is in a nutshell, it seems to be Nintendo's take on Valkyria Chronicles. They decided to create this strategy game that they've taken out the RPG part of it. There's no leveling up or anything, so it's not like Fire Emblem. And you've got this behind-the-shoulder view of the action, and you can move around the playing field, and every time that you move or that you do a certain action, it consumes your steam gauge. And once you run out of that steam, then your turn is over, and it's, you know, off to the next unit or enemy. So yeah, very much like kind of a tactical third person shooter, and it's quite impressive in my opinion. Like they've really made use of you know, they were showing off how the elevation plays a part, and the damage that you do to the enemy or the cover that you have. But it's not just elevation. You've got these bridges, or like you can just go hide from the enemy, or you can go above them, drop something on top of them. It's I don't know. It's very fully fleshed out, and I'm kind of surprised that Intelligent Systems is doing this. And, you know, before, and normally in their strategy games, elevation is just a matter of, okay, so your unit is on a mountain, so maybe the archer, you know, shoots a little bit farther or hits a little bit more strong, does a little bit more damage, but that was basically the extent of it.
I guess when you go to that, the ground level view more, It makes sense more. It's not as abstract anymore, you know. Even though you could take it further, even with a more abstract presentation of the environment, it just seems more pertinent or necessary. I think is a natural sort of extension from this style. But it is quite. As somebody who likes Advance Wars and Fire Emblem, I'm certainly interested in another intelligent system strategy game, and I'm not averse to making it more action based, as I very much like action games in general. So that is definitely very intriguing. Again, yeah, the fact that they didn't try and sort of position it as some sort of spin off of one of their existing strategy series, which has been done in the past with Battalion Wars. You know, which was developed by Kuju or whatever, you know, the UK studio was not being developed by Intelligent Systems, but they still tried to sort of sell it as somehow, for commercial reasons, of course, that it was connected to other things. But here they've had the courage to have this, original kind of characters and this very, very distinct sort of comic book Silver Age comics look to it and all that, it's bold, I think, and I have no idea whether it's going to be something I'll enjoy a great deal yet, but it's certainly got my interest, and again, it's another 2015 game. I think that's the only
that's a running theme.
That was the surprise for me, is just I thought that game would be something that could come out this year, but it turns out it didn't. But when it is as original as this is, as it seems to be, then it's not a great surprise perhaps that it's going to take a while longer in the oven.
But it's not going to suck again.
With the pedigree of the developer, I'd be very surprised if it didn't deliver, but may not be as kind of well-rounded and polished as some of the tried and true formulae, because it is trying something a bit different. But that's the joy of doing something different. And then presumably, if it still achieves enough of what it set out to achieve, the sequel can start becoming inevitable out some of those things.
Anyway, we don't have that much that we can say about it because it's so early and we didn't see a ton of it, but it does look promising. And I'm kind of wondering if, the wild success that Fire Emblem Awakening was just afforded Intelligent System the freedom to work on whatever they wanted.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was interesting that, somebody asked, with you incorporating kind of the third person shooter mechanic into this, is this kind of they kind of dovetailed that with Splatoon, and they said, is this some sort of directive for the company or some sort of movement towards shooters? And they said, no, we just thought that this worked for this concept, which I thought was pretty cool. So it wasn't something they were trying to shoehorn in there. This was probably something they had percolating on the back burner that they were thinking about, maybe probably a different approach to combat, something a little bit more active. I think that they definitely want to make their games more approachable. And I think that's kind of an avenue that they saw to achieve that goal. So
because I mean it's worth remembering, obviously it's been quite a while since the last Advance Wars, but it's also worth remembering that the last Advance Wars Days of Ruin didn't even come out in Japan. So I mean this isn't just obviously a Fire Emblem kind of did well outside of Japan, better than we might have thought for that sort of game. But if you look at the other side, that's actually Advance Wars, which of course has a much greater history in Japan than it does anywhere else, because it goes all the way back to Famicom Wars and Super Famicom Wars, etc. That had kind of seemingly fallen on hard times. It was a game developed by Japanese people in Japanese, then translated, and they couldn't be bothered to put it out in Japan. I mean, so you wonder whether this is kind of a reaction to that as well, that it's like, maybe this is something, obviously it's not just action Advance Wars. Again, that's all it is. It's far more particular and new than that. But again, maybe it's something to make that's not Fire Emblem, but it's still strategy, but that maybe, is more different and, really sort of goes far away from that kind of level of abstraction that you get in tactical RPGs.
The whole tactical RPGs thing, personally, I'm not into them because of the RPG element and because of the leveling up, it kind of stresses me out having to cut all these units and try to guide their improvement, like to make sure that they're going to be strong enough in, at the last level to take on the final boss. And I'm very excited by the fact that they said, no, you don't level up. You just, you might find items during missions that you can improve your character with, and that's more my style.
I think I think the biggest advantage of that, because it can be intimidating, I think, those sorts of aspects to the tactical RPGs, is just that it's more transparent. You know, because there's always that sort of, am I, you know, struggling to do this mission because my tactics aren't very good, or is it because I haven't, you know, got the characters developed the right way? Or, you know, with this, presumably, is this more going to be much more obvious, you know, what is and isn't, you know, the downfall of you, because it's just more direct, you know, everything, the interactions that you have. So I think it could kind of help broaden the appeal of the kinds of games that Intelligent Systems makes, but, you know, at the same time, it is, when you have a kind of chimera type situation like this, you know, you can be, you know, one of those things that estranges everyone. So it's a risk, but you like to see them take those.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting too that you can collect coins and you can use them as currency, to which somebody immediately asked, well, are you going to be able to go online and buy stuff in the eShop? Is that the whole goal of that? And they're like, no. This is not going to be some pay to win sort of thing. So, but it's good that people are actually asking that question though now. So, because it shows that they're capable of doing that if they decided to use their powers for evil instead of good.
So that's basically it for the games I wanted to talk about. We don't have that much time, but I just wanted to ask you guys, overall, did you expect Nintendo to do well at E3 at all? Because I am just, my jaw is on the floor at the way that they've handled the Twitch streaming, and how they had even like indie developers showing off their games yesterday on the Twitch stream. And I thought that is so cool. You know, this is way better exposure for them than just, a couple of seconds of gameplay in a sizzle reel. And so I thought that was cool. I was sad to see today that and the first day that they didn't really showcase more indie titles. They were just showing the ones that are at the Nintendo booth right now. Still very cool of Nintendo. I'm hoping to see more of that next year, but right now I'm just impressed as hell that Nintendo kind of nailed it the first time around.
I thought it would be fairly easy for them to have an E3 that people were reasonably happy with, right? Because, you know, people obviously can't get enough of Smash, and they're giving that to them. Right. But what really impressed me was kind of how they kept their presence high throughout the entire event, and they kept people interested. Right. Which, you don't really see that. I think Guillaume, I think you kind of mentioned this on Twitter, is how Microsoft and Sony, they kind of dropped their big bombs and then they just disappeared into the ether. Whereas Nintendo is just, they kind of kept their buzz going throughout the show, and people seemed to be talking to them throughout the show about them.
I was listening to Connectivity, and I think it was Alex Galafi, who is a little bit annoyed, actually, that, you know, like, the just watching the digital event was not enough. Like, if you wanted to know everything that was going on with Nintendo, you had to keep watching. And I can kind of understand that feeling, you know, especially when you're working for a website and you're trying to keep up with all the news. You want to know, okay, so that's it. Like, everything is known now. So I can write about it and I can tell people about it. But in terms of just enjoying E3 from home, this is just such a great feature, just a great way to do it. And I haven't been thinking about Sony or Microsoft at all for the whole of E3. Like, it's been entirely a Nintendo event for me. But then again, this is from the, you know, I'm speaking from the situation of someone who owns a Wii U and who's just glad that Nintendo is giving him, you know, some hope that there's going to be more games coming. And that it's much easier to convince me that I didn't make a mistake buying a Wii U than it is to convince people who don't have a Wii U yet to pick up one. So do we think that, you know, Nintendo won any points here, or is what they're doing so different, you know, with Splatoon and with the games that they've been showing? Is that a little bit too different to bring in the crowd?
I think the biggest problem that I think Nintendo has at the moment is not so much the games they have or the system they have, but it's path dependency. The problem is that Wii U got off to a bad start and you can't undo that. For as much as the Wii got off to a great start and that helped, you know, that kept kind of spurring them along all the way, you know, almost all the way through, certainly up through like about 2010, and so made things like Mario Kart Wii the biggest selling racing game in the history of the world, Mario Kart 8, however good it is, and I'm sure it's going to drive up system sales, it has been driving up system sales and all that stuff. It's not going to sell those kinds of numbers because, you know, it didn't get off to a good start. That creates certain perceptions around there. You know, it's just path dependency matters. And, you then have to create things that break that path. And that is very difficult rather than just coasting along a positive one that's already been formed. Mm-hmm. And so do the games that they have this year kind of go anywhere near towards doing that? Well, I would say, if anything's going to kind of accomplish that, we've seen that just like having new Super Mario Brothers there at launch, doesn't guarantee anything. And, having Nintendogs there at launch for 3DS didn't do anything. But, I think if anything we're going to do that, maybe it would be something like a Splatoon that is different, something that maybe could kind of catch fire in a way that people wouldn't have expected. I think the problem is it would have had a hell of a lot of better chance of doing that if it was at or near launch, which it very much won't be when we get to 2015. that's the sad fact. It's just that there's been so many things they've done that have been too late, and the whole thing wasn't very well handled. But, from a consumer point of view, from my point of view, it's certainly I already feel like I've had plenty of fun with my Wii U and that I'm not really concerned about further justifying the purchase. And I've got every confidence, especially Smash Brothers. I mean, it hadn't even really started until you've got Smash Brothers, as far as I'm concerned. Yeah. And also, because we haven't mentioned it yet, on Monday, Demon's Crest, confirmed by Capcom for America and Europe. Yes. So everything after that was gravy.
Yeah.
So it's just...
That was actually great because that came out of nowhere and that got everybody buzzing. Like, oh my god, Demon's Crest, Gargoyle's Quest 2,
Mega Man X3, Mega Man 7, yes. A bunch of other stuff. No, I mean, yeah. It's Street Fighter 2010. I mean, come on.
That's pretty cool, too. Yeah, I mean, you want an obscure title, that's it.
It is sort of an hilarious product, but, actually, supposedly not like a terrible game. It's kind of an interesting one if flawed.
No, it's pretty good.
No, I mean, all that Capcom stuff, just getting to the stuff that for whatever reason they couldn't be bothered to put out on the Wii Virtual Console, just the fact that stuff like that's happening. Like I say, it is all gravy for me with Wii U at this point. Yeah, but I'm not that typical of the video game consumer. I accept that.
Yeah, somehow I don't think that Demon's Crest is going to turn
exactly.
Nintendo's origin,
it was like a bomb back then. Like it's not going to do it.
I realize that's the thing. I realize it's one of those things that makes you understand that you have a very select type of Twitter follower. most people are like, the hell's Demon's Crest? Whatever. Everybody on my Twitter feed is like, yes, Demon's Crest. Thank God. Thank you, Lord.
Well, I played it back in the day. Like, I owned that cartridge and I got rid of it when I got rid of all my Super Nintendo stuff, which, of course, is a decision I regret.
Yep, I know the feeling.
But it is, like, without, trying to hype it up too much, it is a very good game. It's kind of a more exploration-based, more slower-paced Mega Man X. Like, there's cool. This kind of idea that you're gaining these power-ups that not only give you the advantage over the enemy, but also will open new paths through the levels, and more levels open up as you get more and more powers. It's really cool. And the first time that you go through it, you're probably going to think, wow, this was four levels short and like 2 hours long. Can I get my money back, please?
But then, well, if you bought realize... it on eBay for like 150 quid, like I would assume like that's pretty much why I haven't done that. I always believe this day was coming. It's taken longer than it should have done, but it is coming.
Yes. Your faith has been rewarded, Greg.
It has. The last time I was on, I think Gargoyle's Quest 2 got rated in Australia or something. And I was like, we're a step closer. It can happen. But
just to finish my point, though, just don't worry. Like, you're going to notice like the outline of a door behind a statue somewhere in the level, and you're going to realize, okay, there's a new path, and then all of a sudden, like, three more levels popped up. Mm-hmm. So, it's a cool game. I'm looking forward to playing it again.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Capcom, some VC stuff. I'm not sure if it's indicative of Capcom just being happy with Nintendo or what. Like, somehow, like, some wounds have healed, maybe. Like, some relationships have been mended. I hope so.
Hard to say, yeah. Of course, you know, Monster Hunter is still on course for next year on 3DS anyway. Doesn't look like they're going to get the sort of the Wii U version this time, maybe. I don't know, maybe if they sell enough systems between now and 2015, they might change their minds. Evidently, you know, Ubisoft have been sitting on stuff. They've got a bar somewhere, and until that gets reached, they're not putting anything else out.
And I just want to get a quick shout out to Affordable Space Adventures, which was one of the indie games that Nintendo was showcasing on the Twitch stream, and it looks fantastic. It's made by Napnock Games, who made the Spin the Bottle party game.
All right.
I said that this is completely different. This is kind of this side-scrolling 2D exploration game where you're controlling this spaceship, and as the title implies, it's a very crappy, cheap spaceship. Kind of a, like, you got the U-Haul of spaceships, and turns out, like, you've got these nice features like a scanner to scan the environment. You've got this kind of gravity generator to make yourself more to make yourself heavier to go through certain places. You've got stabilizers to stabilize your ship, and that's that came in handy when trying to navigate through like a series of lasers. The problem is that your ship is so crappy that you can't have all those features turned on at the same time. You know, it's like an old apartment where you can't have the microwave oven and the toaster running at the same time, or the fuse blows up, you know. So it just looked so much fun on the Twitch stream, and I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, that was one of the indie games. I caught that and Shovel Knight, I think, a little bit when I dipped it. I kind of dipped in here and there, which is what was nice. Yeah. It's just the fact it was going on for so much of the day. Mm-hmm. Over the 3 days, you could just dip in, see something cool. You know, I might go back over the next so many days and kind of, you know, be a bit more kind of rigorous about seeing everything, or certainly the things I'm most interested in. But, you know, that was one of the nicest things about making the sort of home experience. Just make it feel more like an ongoing event and not just you watch the press conference and then just wait for impressions to roll in. You know, it did feel like an ongoing event that you were part of to some extent, to whatever extent you want it to be, there's no doubt for me that for people like us at home, having the canned, you know, pre-filmed, pre-edited presentation is far more pleasurable to watch than the old style press conferences, because there's always just so much bloody downtime in them, you know, where it's just okay, introduce this guy and he gets up and he makes a nervous joke and all that, you know. It's just, it's so much fluff.
You don't want to
see Miyamoto struggling with the controls for Skyward Sword because the Wi-Fi.
I'm sure that had a lot to do with them formulating this strategy, you know, stuff like that. For us, it's a lot better. The question is just whether, you know, it does as much to actually sort of get out there within the media. You know, because they were, especially some of those years during the Wii era, it really felt like they were kind of talking over the heads of the people, you know, in that room to, you know, more the kind of Time magazines or the Newsweeks or the trying to get sort of touch like a mainstream media
you know, that they don't normally get to resonate with. And then you could say, well, if you do this sort of video, then you totally don't have any chance to kind of resonate with them. You know, but for us, it's an unambiguously better thing. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, and beyond the Nintendo Direct, just having the Twitch stream, like being able, I did not get a whole lot of work done at work, personally. I always was listening at least to the stream and, sometimes watching when I was curious about what was going on. And, it was so much fun. And, it was a little bit, the only thing that was disappointing was that perhaps it was a little bit repetitive sometimes. Like, I was hoping when I saw the indie games being showcased, like, yes, keep showcasing more, but they only had like four. And then, they kept repeating, like, having more Smash Brothers matches, which, you know, I understand why that's a game they're trying to sell now.
Yeah.
But personally, I wanted to see a little bit more diversity, I guess.
Yeah, it's almost like if they had like separate channels, like an indie channel or a Smash Brothers channel, that would be great.
But I mean, you know? This is their first year doing this sort of thing, isn't it? I mean, I think what was surprising, as Gil said, is just that they did seem to execute fairly well, it was kind of groundbreaking for them. But that doesn't mean that they won't improve on it and kind of, you know, build on what they've done this year and subsequent years. I think that's clear.
Let's be honest. Like, sometimes Nintendo comes off as amateur hour, you know, sometimes the stuff that they try. So I was just very impressed for this, you know, first attempt at doing this. And this bodes, you know, great things for next E3, hopefully. Unless there's no more E3, unless a lot of things could happen until next year.
Yeah, but, I mean, coming into it, I said, okay, if they do the same thing they did last year, it's going to completely suck. But they didn't, and that was really good, and they actually pulled it off really well.
Yeah. So, that's about all the time that we have for this week. Thank you so much, gentlemen, for talking about Nintendo with me.
Like, it's such a burden.
I know. It's kind of a... It's certainly not something that we're used to week after week. Yeah. So thank you, John. Thank you, Greg.
A pleasure, sir. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I know that the RFN listeners went nuts when they heard that you were going to be in this podcast. So
they've all forgotten me now. It's just like, who's this guy?
Oh, no.
Their frothing anticipation increases. I believe that's what they said.
there is proof to the contrary. People have not forgotten.
Never forget.
And yeah, so thank you everyone for listening. As always, you can write to us at rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. And so next week, I guess we're going to be going over some E3 stories, maybe. Please do watch the videos that James and Johnny and the rest of the Nintendo World Report crew have been putting up. It's on our YouTube channels. All of that is accessible from the site, nintendoworldreport.com. And, send us your questions, your comments, and we'll be back next week. Bye.
Later.
Bye.
I'm not used to this.
All right. Wrap it up now on this part. Ask James.
Yeah, and I had something. I lost it.
You tell me about it.
Yeah.
But anyway, I trust you. Unlike when James is doing the quick and dirty stuff, I trust you to take care of that. No senior moments.